This episode is brought to you by the Arvada Center, because they're kicking off their summer concert series in June. Relax under the stars at the Arvada Center's outdoor amphitheater and take in acts like Melissa Etheridge, Big Richard, Tower of Power, Preservation Hall Jazz Band, The Spin Doctors, and so much more. Concerts are scheduled for June through September. You can find a whole schedule of events and get your tickets today at arvadacenter.org. That's arvadacenter.org. Today on CityCast Denver, the backlash to Mayor Mike Johnston's big push to end homelessness has begun. But maybe that's a good thing? Me and producer Paul Caroli are talking about mega fights over micro-communities, school board vice president Ayonte Anderson's latest legal struggles, and a listener question about boycotts. Today is Tuesday, October 3rd. I'm Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about. We were like explaining like what was going on at Casa Bonita yesterday to my husband's family, and they have a giant Cartman statue now.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about posing with Cartman. Craig's mom goes, "Your friend Cartman? Who's your friend Cartman? I don't think I've met Cartman." And we were like, "Cartman from
Him. He's very rude.
Who else is in the world is named Cartman?" Other than Cartman from South Park. And this is my sweet mother-in-law just does not have a clue. Your friend?
Huh.
Your friend Cartman. Sure.
He is kind of your
sure,
friend
Christy.
Cartman.
He's everyone's friend or everyone's enemy. I don't know. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Bree. Good morning.
Good morning. Before we get started, we got some criticism, or at least a correction.
A correction.
For our characterization of a vape pen that was wrong. A vape pen?
Well, that's what's at issue.
Okay.
So a couple weeks ago on the show, we joked about the new illegal Pete's partnership with the weed company Open Vape.
That's right.
That's where you and I departed from the facts, because we called it, and we're joking about it being vape juice, queso flavored vape juice. Turns out that's not correct. Thanks to listener Cody B, who wrote in to inform us that it is in fact a special weed strain. Open THC vape pen. So that's not vape juice. That is a queso inspired.
I'm so glad the vaping community is on top of this, because what a mischaracterization did we. What
I can't believe we didn't
sacrilege.
Know.
But thank you. I well, still did. Either way, disgusting. Either way.
Well, thank you to Cody, who wrote in, thanks for keeping us accountable on all things cannabis and burritos, as Cody wrote. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Cody. Okay. We're talking, I feel like we just need a section of this show that's like homelessness and the mayor.
I think people want to know. I mean, it's the number one issue in the mayoral race. We talk about it all the time. We need to.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm curious.
I don't know if I'm surprised or bummed out that this is constantly a conversation, but I'm probably happy, because it means we're talking about it, and it means our elected leaders are actually doing something about it. I guess that's where let's start with Johnston's House 1000 project, which was his promise to house 1,000 people by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we with that, Paul?
Well, I've been talking to people over the last few weeks, doing a little bit of reporting, some folks inside the shelter system, someone on city council, an unhoused person. And the picture that I'm getting is that this giant city bureaucracy is finally lurching into movement. Mm. Johnston is here, but everyone else who is involved in a big project like this is like slowly now being tapped to like do their part. And that is creating conflict and a little bit of tension.
When you say that, do you mean that when we say finally, do we mean like since Hancock, or Hancock's administration wasn't doing this, so the Johnston administration is?
Well, just the change. The mere fact of the change.
Okay.
He was elected. He is now the mayor.
And this is
But
his...
on day one, he wasn't like, now we're doing it
this
way. And everyone's like, yes, I understand now. Exactly. Of course we are doing it this way.
It's very complicated.
It's more like, you know, real humans having to like get on board and buy in and like feel invested in something. I mean, the
and
real
believe
hard
in the plan,
part. Yeah.
Right?
A huge part of it.
Okay.
you're saying there's a little bit of, I don't know necessarily gridlock, but at least it's a struggle to really get this thing going.
I think so. And I think you can see that in two places. There's two big aspects of this, though. There's like getting people housed and then establishing the infrastructure.
To house people. Sure.
Exactly.
Sure.
Which you want to start with? You want to talk about micro communities?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Okay. So the micro communities is kind of interesting because we're now at the point that we knew was going to happen, which is the fighting about it part. Because
Where they're going to go.
Johnston has proposed 11 sites across the city. He's been doing these town halls ever since he was sworn into office. But each one of those sites is now a fight with the neighbors. And there's a couple of particular spots that it's already getting a little bit nasty. One, Westward has reported that the Golden Triangle, where there are two proposed micro communities, there was a town hall last week where I guess it got pretty tense, where people were like, you know, hey, Mr. Johnston, you don't understand. Like, we're a very small community and you're putting two sites here, including one catty corner to Levin Deli. I looked at the map. Mm-hmm. That's like, I don't know. That was an interesting place. That's like right next to the art museum. I don't know.
I mean, unhoused folks are kind of already hanging out there. So.
Sure.
I don't know. I mean, also, listeners know where I stand. It's in the middle of the city. You live in the middle of the city. That's where we're probably going to see more folks, right? I don't know.
Well, that's the other part of this, is that it's not all the middle of the city. They're really spread out everywhere. And one of the other big fights that's happened is around Holly Hills in southeast Denver.
Yep.
So this is another Westward report, but apparently there's a group of neighbors around Holly Hills who are now trying to form their own neighborhood organization so they can like formally push back on this site.
I mean, if you want to get anything done in the city, just form a neighborhood organization and then you become a strong arm. That's what I've learned.
You think?
Oh, 100%. For sure.
I don't know. I feel like this group is, I would not be betting on them. Because I talked to Councilwoman Diana Romero Campbell, who represents that area of the city.
And just, was this Kendra Black's district?
Yes.
Previously? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, Southeast Denver. I'm just trying to give folks a picture because Holly Hills is honestly not something that most folks know.
Exactly. Well, let me explain it because it's actually even more complicated. It's not just like a small neighborhood. It's actually technically Arapahoe County.
Yeah.
It's one of those little pockets in the city that for some reason, some little quirk of history is not actually part of Denver. So what Diana Romero Campbell explained to me is, they don't pay taxes there. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not part of Denver, even though it's like obviously part of like how people get around and live in the city. Those are not her constituents. So she said she's listening to them, but also recognizing she doesn't really have any obligation to them. She collaborates with the Arapahoe County Commissioner who represents them.
Sure.
Apparently they CC her on all their email threads. But for her, it's like not really a concern that this is happening.
I used to live like on the border of this. I used to live off of Monaco and Carter Circle. I'm just looking at the map and I remember being like not quite understanding it. But okay, so the issue here is it's kind of like they're not taxpayers. They're not part of Denver.
Yeah, yeah, so they don't really have a say.
So they don't have a say. And I would say maybe that's why they also don't want this.
Why?
Because they're not part of Denver, so they didn't get to vote on it, so they don't want it. Is that what they're saying?
Maybe. I don't know. I couldn't get in touch with them. They did not respond to any of my emails. I would have loved to ask them about their opposition. But kind of an interesting choice to like to propose the micro community goes there on the border of this unincorporated non-Denver place in the city.
It seems like a little bit of a strategic or just like it seems like an extra fight that you maybe don't need to have if you move it over like a block or something. I don't know. My argument here is everybody needs to be shouldering this burden. So we got to figure out something because it's not going anywhere. So
One of the other people I talked to is his name is Dwayne Peterson. He is an unhoused person.
That's right.
He says that he is the only unhoused person on the mayor's advisory committee for housing. And he's actually been in the news quite a bit. He got in touch with us last week around the time of that big sweep at 8th and Logan. Do you remember this one? Mm-hmm. So he was, I think, pretty upset because what he sees is this micro community system looks a lot like the safe outdoor spaces that were popping up in the city in the last few years. I think that's what Johnston modeled them off of.
There
was
one in my neighborhood. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and the person he hired to be one of his top advisors, Cole Chandler, used to run the safe outdoor spaces through the Colorado Village Collaborative. So that's where Dwayne Peterson is upset because he had a really bad time living at one of the safe outdoor spaces.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, he said there was violence. He was felt intimidated. And then he made one allegation that was really, really serious. He said that while he was living at the SOS, he was discouraged from calling the police when there were safety issues. So I checked in with the CVC and the mayor's office to ask Cole if that was the
true.
Case, if that's
sure.
the policy. Everybody denies it.
Okay.
So make of that
what you
will.
We've got two sides to that story. Yeah, I mean, I think it's really helpful to hear from someone like Dwayne who's been unhoused, who's also lived in these...
Is currently unhoused.
Mm-hmm. I would say this is just not a perspective we hear a lot of folks that maybe are pushing up against what are being proposed as solutions for unhoused folks. But I do think it's super helpful to hear from him directly because he lived there.
Yeah.
He knows.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because like he's a very critical voice right now. And the people who are picking him up, the media... He was on KOA last week. Mm. There was an article about him in the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle.
Oh, goodness gracious.
But nowhere else. So he's in these very conservative leaning places where his narrative reinforces their existing biases.
Nicely. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to discount his narrative. His experience is real and that's what it is. I think what's unfortunate is what's happening, which is then whoever wants to take hold of it can put it towards their idea or agenda or whatever. And I mean, I'm sorry, the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle is one of the worst publications in the city in terms of like how it treats marginalized groups, how it talks about a lot of problems and experiences here. And I read that thing a lot because it's based out of the community that I grew up next to. Mm-hmm. So I don't know about that. But so you've got Dwayne's perspective. You also heard from two other folks directly working in the shelter system that reached out to us, right? Or one person. And I'm so curious what you heard from folks working within the system.
Yeah. Two anonymous shelter workers I spoke to last week, both seem pretty frustrated. I think last week was really difficult because at the same time that Johnston is trying to like, you know, get this thing moving, start housing people, we just recently had an influx of migrants, another wave of migrants coming to the city. So those folks are taking advantage of a lot of the same services and the same shelter system that unhoused folks who live here take advantage of. So they were talking about like, this is just like stretched. Resources are stretched thin.
Sure.
You know, one of them told me this story about a family who like, she tried to help out late at night and get a shelter space, but there wasn't one. And so she thinks they just like slept on the street last week one night, which was difficult. But they shared with me a couple of rumors that I guess are going around.
Allegedly?
Yeah, allegedly. And then I did ask the mayor about these. I have some answers. One is, you know that Best Western the city bought a couple months ago, just off I-70?
Yeah.
The rumor is that the Johnston administration is trying to house all 1,000 people that he wants to house by the end of the year at this location. Not necessarily in this Best Western, which only has 193 rooms.
Yeah, I was going to say, doesn't have 1,000 rooms.
Well, yeah, but like at that site. So they were like, he's going to build a tent city. He wants to make this Denver's new Skid Row. That's what they heard, at least. They also said that there was a concern that Johnston's definition of housed, which we talked about on the show last week.
Yes.
The fact that it's looser than the federal government's definition of housed might create some problems for service providers. Like they might not be able to offer services to people who are now technically defined as housed.
Because they're no longer homeless? Is that where?
By this definition or by different definitions.
Sure.
They were just like, this might be a real big problem.
Okay.
Yeah. So I talked to someone at the Salvation Army, which operates the Best Western, and I talked to the mayor's office. They both say there's no plans to house everybody at this site. That's not at all what we're thinking about, this whole like Skid Row rumor. Happy to dispel that one. But this hotel, former hotel, now shelter, which they've renamed New Directions.
Right.
They say that they plan to have at least 250 people in there, despite there being only the 193 rooms. So they're going to double up at some point.
oh, these aren't like couples or families or.
I guess they might be. Okay. I don't know. There's a lot of open questions about this. I mean, it's such a big thing he's trying to do so fast. Like, I think these questions are just coming up as it happens.
This is what I worry about is like, you know, on the campaign trail for any politician, you make a lot of promises because you're putting forth your ideas in order to get buy-in from folks to say, this is the kind of candidate I am. This is the kind of person I am. This is the kind of thing I want to prioritize. And so I understand where Johnson was coming from saying, this is my priority. I just wonder if this hard number of 1,000 people and this time frame was kind of unrealistic to the point where it's, I don't know, the definitions are going to get murky of what it means to be housed. And then are we spending our resources in the wrong place because we're trying to just house people as fast as we can versus maybe putting that towards longer term housing or purchase of more places? I don't know. I feel this pressure is not necessarily going to lead to the greatest outcome.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to say. I think it's inevitable that there's going to be some waste here. We're going to overpay for a lot of these things as a city. But it's the speed that he wants to go, the pace in terms of and the ambition of the level of the fix that he's got in mind, Mayor Johnston, that's kind of leading to these issues, and it's just going to be part of it that we have to accept.
I just worry that folks too will see this and go, oh my God, are we really wasting a ton of money and not actually having the best outcomes? And then do we want to keep spending more money? Because this is tax, you know what I mean? This is citizens, taxpayer money, which includes all kinds of people. But I just could see where folks would be like, is this the best use of our city's resources?
Yeah, yeah.
So
I'm sure people will continue to ask that and we will continue to talk about that. For now though, I think most people are behind Mayor Johnston. I think most people, although there is tension, we had that poll from the Colorado Polling Institute back in August, and nothing really significantly fundamentally has changed since then. I would bet that most people, even if they have some criticisms on the edges of this whole thing,
it's still overall
something
popular.
That is popular that most people are cheering for.
I'll be curious in a year from now when we listen back to this.
Too.
I'm just so curious how it will look, and I hope for the best, honestly. This episode is brought to you by Pine Melon, the farmer's market delivered. Pine Melon is a next generation grocery delivery app that partners with over 200 farmers, ranchers, and producers in Colorado to help make fresh, locally sourced foods available to the Denver community at fair prices. Get high quality meats, eggs, and dairy from small local farms, fresh baked breads from local bakeries, and more, as well as all of your favorite pantry staples. Best part is, Pine Melon offers same-day delivery to Denver and soon Boulder within a two-hour window, no subscription necessary. Save time in your busy schedule and get fresh and healthy groceries delivered right to your door. Join the movement and support local today. Use promo code CITYCASTDENVER for $75 off your first delivery at pinemelon.com. That's pinemelon.com.
All right, let's talk about something else that's been in the news. The school board has been in the news consistently. And there's been some development with some of the lawsuits around board vice president Ayonte Anderson. Bree, what's happening?
Yes. So currently, Director Anderson is being sued by a parent for blocking her from his Facebook page and deleting her comments. This lawsuit comes after Colorado legislators passed a law earlier this year that would allow politicians to block or ban anyone from their personal social media profiles, meaning not their public-facing profiles where they are supposed to be conducting official business, I guess. Mm-hmm. The struggle here, and also I would say this is actually I think the U.S. Supreme Court is looking at the validity of this law.
So free speech concerns?
Yeah, and I also just think it's blurry. I mean, we don't have regulations around how public servants use social media. You know what I mean? There's no official law that says this is how you use your public page, this mm-hmm. is how you use your private page. But yeah, it's a free speech issue, essentially, that the Supreme Court is debating. I don't know. Again, the thing that I'm thinking about here is like, what's public and what's private? I see public officials use semi-personal pages for public. It's like just, it's so blurry. But I think the most interesting part of this particular case, Paul, is that the person suing him is a parent named Eve Chen. And I was like, I know this name. why do I know this name? And I search in my emails, and she is a parent that was circulating a petition to get McAuliffe International's principal reinstated earlier this year.
Oh, yeah.
She was part of a group of parents that said the seclusion room that was under scrutiny was being used appropriately, and some parents appreciated that it existed, and they thought that the principal was in the right and that he should not have been fired. And then Director Anderson also said on social media of Eve Chen that she is, quote, BFF and co-conspirator of Mary Catherine Brooks Fleming. I can't say if that's real or not. I don't know their relationship. But do you remember Mary Catherine Brooks Fleming?
I do. I remember her well, especially her testimony at the Capitol a couple years ago. She is the person who accused Auntie Anderson of sexually assaulting 62 DPS students, including DACA recipients. This was a very sensational accusation that led to a months-long investigation in which he was ultimately exonerated.
Exactly. So,
yeah. Remember so, very well.
Yeah, I mean, it was like you said, the testimony was pretty intense. The alleged behavior was wild to me. Now Mary Catherine Brooks Fleming also back in the news because Colorado Court of Appeals is reviving part of the 2021 case involving Anderson and her, and they're reversing the dismissal of Anderson's claims against Brooks Fleming, meaning he can proceed with suing her for defamation.
Oh, in connection to those allegations.
Uh-huh.
Interesting.
So, I don't know. Mary Catherine Brooks Fleming and Eve Chen are really, they are just in the news. I don't know. I think
they really do not like this.
They really don't like Director Anderson.
Yeah.
We've had him on the show. We've had a writer and a thinker here in Denver, Theo Wilson, on the show to talk about his perspective on this case. I have my own feelings on it, but I don't know. It's been an interesting time for the school board, and we'll see where that case goes. It means we've got another case now involving Director Anderson and these parents.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think this matters at this point here? This beef that Anderson has with these two people, or maybe they have with him?
I mean, I think if they're reviving part of this case, it's saying that he should be able to sue these folks for defamation. Because I think the struggle here, I think, is Director Anderson is very outspoken. So a lot of folks have an opinion on him, regardless mm-hmm. of these court situations. But when I feel like in the public eye, you put them all together and it feels like, oh my God, can the school board get it together? But part of me is like, he has the right to sue these folks who said really awful things about him in public, whether he's part of this dramatic school board or not. That's a pretty serious situation. So,
yeah, is that the root of the school board's problems? That one of the members is being
constantly
defamed?
Was
dogged by a months-long investigation that has turned out to be
can't be helping.
Not much.
Situation.
I mean, it was very divisive at the time.
And I mean, it will be interesting to see how things go, because he is actually done with his term here in the next couple of months. And then mm-hmm. he is running for House District 8, I believe, Leslie Harrod's mm-hmm. seat. So this is not the last of Director Anderson. We'll be hearing what's going on with him. If anything,
guaranteed to be interesting.
Yeah, he's a fascinating character. We love hearing from you about things you care about. So we always share comments, thoughts, questions that come through our CityCast Denver hotline. Who are we hearing from today?
This time we've got a voicemail from Bennett from the Spear neighborhood.
Cool.
Hey, Bree. Hey, Paul. This is Bennett from the Spear neighborhood. Love the show. Thanks for talking about really tough issues like emissions regulations for the biggest polluters in the state. I just graduated from DU with a master's in environmental policy, and I'm always curious about how we can make these emissions reductions happen more quickly. So yeah, thanks for talking about Suncor and all that comes with that. You're both talking about how the government should crack down more on these polluters like Leprino Farms and cap their emissions. I was wondering, while we wait for the government to crack down on, you know, the cheesemaker and these other companies, why don't we as consumers stop supporting them? Because clearly their primary incentive is money, and yes, we can beg for better policies to stop them from making so much environmentally harmful products, or we could just stop buying that product. Paul joked that he's 60% Leprino Farms cheese. So do you actually want these regulations, which would make it harder, more expensive, maybe even financially unfeasible to keep producing the products that you love? Genuine question. I love your takes on these things, so I'm curious to hear what you'd say about this. Thanks.
Paul, can I just defend you for just a minute?
Defend me?
Well, you are 60%.
About what?
I just want to say if you're 60% Loprino cheese, I'm
60. And I'm proud of that.
I know. I'm just going to say I'm in defense of that. Okay. I'm probably 60% Starbucks. So, And Starbucks, not renowned to be the greatest company. So, interesting take. I appreciate it. I'm always about people-led initiatives like boycotts. I think the struggle we would have is something you talked about in the show, which is you eat Loprino cheese on all kinds of things, sometimes whether you know it or not, right? Not because you don't know it, but because you're not going out and buying Loprino cheese. You're going out and buying a pizza. You're going out and getting a sandwich. You're going out, you know what I mean? So I love the idea. I don't know if we would know exactly how to boycott them other than just stop eating out.
I think if that was the path that folks wanted to take, it would be not that difficult to track which products and how to boycott these. And boycotts work. That's from my reading. I think that is actually a really good way to make change in the world. I mean, look at what happened in South Africa and apartheid. It was the international boycott that did that. They're trying to do the same thing with Israel and Palestine right now, the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. I don't know if I think that. See, Bennett, I feel like you're really undervaluing politics. I feel like politics is the place to make the change here. Like, a boycott is maybe a good thing, but in this case, because of your point, Bree, like, class is an important factor to consider, because if you're more well off, you can pay for alternatives, you can pay for a higher quality pizza cheese, maybe you can pay a little bit more to have something that's not the most convenient or the easiest, best thing for you. So I feel like politics is kind of the place to make a change like this happen. And that just takes like organizing and talking to people and changing people's minds and building a movement and then electing leaders that will take a stand because they know that they'll get reelected because you've got all these millions of people behind them.
I think both are possible. I hear you, Paul. I agree with you that sometimes, especially when it comes to food access, it can be really difficult for folks. I complain, I feel like, every week on the show how expensive groceries are. So I can see where sometimes we are making choices we wouldn't normally make because that's what's most affordable for folks. But I just see both as an option. Like, we could attempt to make some more conscious choices or attempt to make some more conscious changes in our consumer behavior if we're able to. And I think the power in that also is talking about it. Like, when you start talking about something, I found
if you're passionate about it.
Yeah, when I start talking about something like this, I think a lot of folks sometimes will be like, oh, you know what? I never thought about it that way. Maybe I could just stop, you know, going to this place or using this service. And what I thought was interesting about our conversation with Noelle Phillips was how many different kinds of industries are polluters. So just like stop drinking Molson Coors too. You could stop doing that. Cargill Meat Solutions. Oof, what a terrifying name. Vegetarianism's always an option. And I will tell you, as someone that's trying to eat more plant-based, beans and tofu are way cheaper than meat. So if you want an affordable change, there's little things we could do. I appreciate that perspective. I think what Bennett's saying is we have a little bit more power than we think, because we can elect people, but then we have to wait to decide what they do. And then we have to follow every move that they make. And we have to hope that they still have our best us in mind. But in the meantime, we could try to do something ourselves.
Yeah.
So
can I ask you a controversial question?
Sure.
Because this is something I thought about a lot while we were preparing for that conversation last week. I had just seen the movie How to Blow Up a Pipeline, which was a Coloradan filmmaker who made this great movie about eco-terrorism.
Ooh.
Are you familiar with this?
No.
You get to watch it. The movie's great. You watch these young kids.
I know
kids.
Some eco-terrorists. So.
You do? How do you feel about eco-terrorism?
It's not my brand. I don't know.
Yeah? Do you feel like that's the way to make a way to make change? Or is that just
in a society where you can feel fairly powerless against giant corporations, maybe that's some folks' angle to get things done and be heard. Money moves things. What's the other way? People power? I don't know. I don't know if I'd take a hard stance on either way. I'm just saying I know folks that do it.
What do they say?
Well, one
Why
of them's in
it?
Jail. So.
Oh. That's risk. One of them lived
at a punk house I knew back in the day in Baker, and I think he's been in jail for a long time. But I don't know. I just was. You started mentioning boycotts, and I was like, "What was my favorite boycott from history?" And it was the queer community boycotting Florida orange juice because their spokesperson was Anita Bryant in the late 70s and early 80s, who was this anti-gay spokesperson. She got pied in the face on TV. It's an amazing story. But they stopped serving. They stopped making screwdrivers at gay bars, and people stopped drinking orange juice. And I just like, I kind of get excited about those movements because, again,
it's a way to take power back.
Yes. So I'm with you, Bennett. I think it's something we can talk about and something we can do, but we also have to do the other part because let's hit problems from multiple angles.
Yeah.
You know?
Because you can't always choose. Bennett, I want to hear more what you think. Just got a big master's degree in environmental studies. Sounds like
I know you've been thinking
better
about
than
this
we do.
Pretty deeply for a long time.
Call it again. Tell us the
answer. Yeah, that was great. That was really thoughtful. Thank you.
Thank you, Bennett.
That was awesome.
All right, Bree, I think that's it for the show today.
Okay. Well, thanks, Paul.
See you next time.
See ya. That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. If you enjoyed this show, why not take a minute to tell Anita Bryant about us? Rate the show wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to our morning newsletter, Hey Denver, and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. See ya.
I like espresso in my chai. You like margarine in your butter.
I do.